This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We got Anthony Herron and Arthur Arkish here on 670 The Score, taking you up till noon. Going to be plenty of football to continue discussing in this final hour. We've been kind of peering around the other contenders, the two better teams in the NFC North and where the Bears have been this season. We talked to Jim Ozarski of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel in the previous hour, and now we have the honor of going out to the phone lines, talking to Chris Thomason of the St. Paul Pioneer Press. He's a Vikings beat reporter, and he's live at US Bank Stadium, if I'm not mistaken, as the Vikings prepare to take on the Detroit Lions. Chris, how you doing this morning?
Hey, doing well. Yes, indeed. Right here at the stadium, 1 hour before kickoff.
Well, so Minnesota has been a squad that it feels like the Vikings, with all the expectations that came into the season, and then you just weren't completely sure, you know, what was going to happen with, as teammates are sort of pseudo calling out Kirk Cousins, and that's kind of been the framework of his career, where folks are never completely certain about old Kirk Cousins. And now here the Vikings are. They're running off some wins, and they're starting to play some quality football. They, of course, went down to the Seahawks last week, but it wasn't a game where it felt like they didn't play well. It just felt to me like they got outplayed by a better team. How would you encapsulate where at 8-4 and second place in the division where this Minnesota Vikings season is right now?
Well, the crazy thing is this season that the Vikings offense overall has been far better than the defense. I mean, the calling card for the Vikings in Mike Zimmer's first 5 years was always the staunch defense. They were regularly in the top five, number one in the NFL 2 years ago, and now the Vikings defense is stunningly number 16, which would be the worst mark for Zimmer in his last 12 years as either head coach or defensive coordinator. Meanwhile, the offense is number 8 in total offense in the NFL, and that stands up to be the highest ranking that the Vikings have had in 10 years. I mean, the season started out with the Vikings playing good defense and struggling on offense, as evidenced by that 16-6 loss at Chicago in week 4. But since then, it's almost been a reversal. The offense has gotten much better and the defense has faltered at times.
That has been wild to see, for sure, and to even think that maybe the offense has more staying power just with how consistent Kirk has been, how well he's looked in that system, and with apparently Dalvin Cook avoiding a serious injury last week. But before we kind of get into that, I do just want to get your sense on whether the defense can find itself again. It looks like Xavier Rhodes just isn't the same player anymore, and I don't think it's just him, obviously. They let Seattle run wild last week. So do you think Mike Zimmer can help this unit kind of regain its identity before this thing's all said and done?
Well, I asked Mike Zimmer this week flat out. I mean, are you surprised by the play of your defense and your number 6 ranking, which would be as low as since 2007? And his response was very quick and short. It's like, well, ask me at the end of the season. Season's not over yet.
Right.
So basically, yeah, I think they certainly will be better. And part of that has to do with the schedule. They've got 3 of their final 4 games at home. Detroit today. One would think that's not a huge challenge. Then add a losing L.A. Chargers team the following week. They do close with the Packers at home and then the Bears. That could be a meaningless game perhaps at the end of the year. So the schedule, yeah, is not as tough. So that'll be one reason the defense gets better. But you mentioned Xavier Rhodes. I mean, it's mystifying. The guy's gone from being All-Pro 2 years ago to being definitely a below average NFL cornerback. And right. I asked him about that this week, and he said he had no really reason why. I mean, he's been healthy. Maybe age has just caught up with him at 29. But, and you touched upon last Monday's game. They gave up 218 yards on the ground, so the run defense has to do better as well.
How about old Dalvin Cook, man? He seemed like a guy who could be on track to certainly be one of, if not, you know, in the discussion for best backs in football. Where do we see him as far as just his role in the Vikings offense, him staying healthy, and how much of a future star do the Vikings in that world feel like he could still become?
Yeah, the only question about Dalvin Cook, really, since he got here as a second-round pick in 2017 has been durability.
Yeah.
He missed the last 12 games in his rookie year of 17 with a torn ACL. He missed five games last year with hamstring issues, and then he got hurt with a chest injury last Monday against Seattle. He's expected to play today. He has been playing in a bit of pain of late. I mean, he got knocked out of that game on Monday, but he actually had suffered that injury 2 weeks earlier against Denver. So, but yeah, when healthy, he's definitely one of the top backs in the league and certainly very versatile, three down back, and can catch the ball as well as he can run it.
Yeah, he's been a joy to watch this year. It seems like Christian McCaffrey's gotten a lot of the, or at least, you know, up until recently had gotten, if there was a non-QB MVP buzz, it was kind of Michael Thomas and Christian McCaffrey, and I kind of felt like Dalvin Cook maybe belonged right in that conversation too. He's been special. It does sound like they avoided a serious injury with him. What's up with Adam Thielen, though, Chris? On track to miss his fourth game in a row, it sounds like, and obviously there was a bye sandwiched in there too. It's got to be a concern at this point. And how has the offense kind of navigated without him?
Well, he acknowledged that he tried to come back too soon in a game November 3rd at Kansas City. He hurt his hamstring October 20th against Detroit, missed one game. And then, you know, he's a competitor. He wanted to play. And they said the MRIs checked out. And then he didn't make it out of the first quarter and hadn't been seen since. He'll miss his fourth straight game. You know, hamstring injuries are so tricky. And I just don't think they want to risk it, and they have been playing pretty well overall offensively without Thielen. What's kind of happened there is, Stephon Diggs has had some big games, but other games the defense has paid extra attention to him.
Right.
But they successfully have thrown the ball around. Tight ends Kyle Rudolph and Irv Smith Jr. have gotten much more involved in the offense. Running backs have been catching balls. I mean, there's been some games since Thielen's been out where they have eight different guys catch passes.
Arthur and I were just talking in a previous segment about going beyond this season with the Bears with a second-year head coach and a third-year quarterback and what the results of this season could mean for the team moving forward and how the roster could be constructed. Where do things sit with the Vikings right now going beyond this season? Are there players, key members of the organization right now whose contracts are coming up? Or is there any sense that for this window of the Vikings that this could be the final year of said window before things are structured differently roster-wise?
Well, they definitely are up against it with the salary cap. I mean, I think Rhodes certainly won't be back at his big salary number. And Everson Griffin, even though he's having a pretty good season, we'll have to see if he comes back at his big number. But on offense, I mean, they're going to have to make a decision probably on Kirk Cousins. Are they going to extend him? And he'll obviously want a crazy number if they extend him as much money as he's making. But the playoffs will tell. I mean, if Cousins takes him on a deep playoff run, I think you got to extend him. But if it's one game at out, then I think they'll have some very tough questions our decisions, especially with that question.
Chris, I know a lot of people have a hard time kind of reconciling really good Kirk Cousins with something less than that, as we've also seen at times. But I don't know if anyone has a harder time than those of us in Chicago, because for whatever reason, this Bears defense has really been like kryptonite, not only for Kirk Cousins, but Dalvin Cook, too, who is yet to go off on this Bears D. Obviously, Week 17 could be meaningless. It also could be, much like last year, where it's a must-win game. How convinced are you that Kirk Cousins has kind of turned a corner for good? And how do you kind of diagnose what it is about the Bears that the Vikings just have not been able to get the better of them yet?
Well, he's still, Booger McFarland on Monday Night Football, well, he did say that the Vikings lost the Minneapolis Miracle. He did make one good point in that kind of the national perception of Kirk Cousins. I mean, those who are watching him here on a regular basis and seeing how well he's doing, especially against lesser teams, think, hey, this guy is having a heck of a season, which he certainly is statistically, but right. The national perception, and Booger had mentioned it on the air last Monday, of Kirk Cousins is still a guy who can't win the big game. I mean, he didn't play all that bad last Monday on Monday Night Football, but they end up losing mainly due to the defense. And then the headline is Kirk Cousins drops to 0-8 in Monday Night Football, worst record of all time for a quarterback on Monday Night Football. Mm-hmm. So he still has this perception of not being able to win the big game, and part of it, you know, is, or much of it is accurate. I mean, the bottom line, the Vikings have not beaten a team this season that currently has a winning record. Looked like the win a couple weeks ago over Dallas would be a big win, but then they've collapsed since then. But, yeah, against Chicago, that you mentioned that game also, that will be an interesting game, because you got to figure, even if the Bears are eliminated from playoff contention anyway, they might be playing for a win. That might be kind of their playoff game, and they might approach it in that manner and have success against Kirk Cousins.
The rushing defense has certainly been leaky amongst a number of things for the Vikings that, as to your point earlier, has them middle of the pack. And they've got some teams coming up who either should have more of a run focus or are having success with the run game and some talented backs. What are some of the things that Mike Zimmer has discussed in trying to find ways to correct the rushing defense that's kind of failed them at different points?
Well, the thing that Zimmer said, and the defensive coordinator George Edwards echoed this past week, is it was players kind of doing things on their own, is what they said. But, you know, they didn't single out any specific players at all. And I was talking to one defensive lineman who said they're kind of stressing everyone has to do their job, play as a unit, nobody be Superman. But, you know, their defensive ends, Everson Griffin and Danielle Hunter, they are better against the pass rushers than they are against the run. Linville Joseph had returned. He's the run stopper. He returned Monday after missing two games with a knee injuries. But you have to wonder, you know, if he was at full strength and maybe was a little bit rusty in missing, you know, two games, including the bye week. So he hadn't played, you know, in three previous. So those might have been some factors there. So we'll have to see what happens in the next few weeks.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Still a lot to, you know, a lot lies ahead, a lot to be answered. Chris, we appreciate the time. And before we let you go, I do want to get your sense. Do the Vikings hold on here? Do you see them getting in as a wild card, or I guess still an outside chance at winning the division, but more likely a wild card? So the follow-up to that is, do you think, given their struggles on the road this season, is this a team that is constructed? Have you seen enough to think it can make a viable run, assuming it does get in and has to go on the road in week one?
Yeah, I think they'll get in as a wild card. I mean, to not get in as a wild card, they'd have to lose two games, maybe even three of their last four, because you look at some of the tough schedules that the teams behind them. It'll be tough to win the division, because even if Green Bay loses that game here in a few weeks, they have to lose one other game.
Right.
So winning the division will be tough. But, yeah, I think it's the type of team that if they can get the offense and the defense synced up and go on the road, they could win a few playoff games. I mean, it'd be a tall order to win three in a row on the road to get to the Super Bowl, but there's no doubt I think they are certainly capable of pulling a road upset or two in the playoffs.
That is Chris Thomason of the St. Paul Pioneer Press. He's on Twitter at Chris Thomason. Pretty simple right there in the Twitter sphere, and you can find his work there or read him at the St. Paul Pioneer Press. Chris, as always, appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, really appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
Thanks, Chris. Enjoy the game today.
He's covering the Minnesota Vikings. They are at Detroit facing the Lions today. And this hour is brought to you by Team Hochberg. Visit their website, 56David.com. That's 56David.com. He's Arthur Arkush. I'm Anthony Hare, and this is 670 The Score. We will take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit of college football as the college football playoff rankings are upon us. They are being released at the moment. We'll have Pete Futek of College Football News here with us to discuss that. And it's it feels like it's going to be straightforward, but as it is announced, we'll make sure you are aware of that and a few of the storylines that are going to be there from a college football coaching and playoff standpoint. So we'll take a time out, come right back, and discuss that more here on 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Arthur Arkish and Anthony Heron here on 670 The Score. We're with you until the noon hour, and as noon hits, then we'll move on to the programming. But later on this evening, you have the Bulls at the Miami Heat pregame. We'll start at 4:45 with Chuck Swirsky and Bill Winnington. That's, of course, available on the radio.com app as well. Then after Bulls basketball, we're going to have Sunday Night Football. Rams are going to take on the Seahawks. It's going to be a very, very fun game. I heard a lot of fantasy football discussion earlier before you and I got on, Arthur, about that. Russell Wilson and what's going to happen there between he and Jared Goff and the fantasy implications there. Mm-hmm. So that, or just the NFC playoff picture, will obviously be fun to listen to right here on The Score. So we're going to join Westwood One's broadcast in progress following Bulls postgame on The Score. But as referenced, Arthur Arkish and Anthony Heron here on The Score, and the college football playoff rankings being released right at this moment. And I don't think there were any big surprises to anticipate as that was taking place, but we're going to have fun talking about the college football playoff. Who better to do that with than our buddy Pete Futek of College Football News. He is on Twitter at Pete Futek. That is F-I-U-T-A-K. You hear him all the time here on The Score. Pete, how you doing this late morning?
Sleep deprived, but everything's all right. How you guys been?
We're good, man. We're really good. They haven't released. We haven't seen ESPN unveil the number one team yet. I don't think there's any real.
Akron. Akron's
yes. Yeah. How cool would that be?
Run. Exactly. They're saying, you know what? Let's give them a break. They're coming on. I think the Zips have best team theory. We're putting them in there. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that would be a lot of fun if something like that happened. Oklahoma coming in at number 4, Clemson at number 3, Ohio State at number 2, and in a moment they will say LSU. The Bayou Bengals have overtaken the Ohio State Buckeyes. They're going to be the number 1 team. Ah, there it is. It has been revealed by the Chiron operator. The three-dimensional graphic is on the screen. So LSU number 1, Ohio State number 2, Clemson number 3, Oklahoma number 4. So with all the weekend of college football conference championship games behind us, was there anything that stood out to you as the most surprising result?
You know what? Fortunately, in a lot of ways, Utah getting just wiped off the map wasn't that crazy. But sort of the issue was, again, the committee's kind of had it easy for 6 years. They haven't had – it's been a pretty chalky six-year run of conference championships. What we have yet to see in the conference or the college football playoff era is like a Virginia beating Clemson or something really out of the blue that would make things crazy. And even if it happened, even if Wisconsin pulled that off yesterday against Ohio State, you still probably have the same top four roughly in the same order as you have now. So – there's nothing really that's all that wacky about it, but it was just an interesting conference championship day. I mean, LSU being so businesslike and kind of boring about it, Ohio State saying, okay, enough of this, and flipping the switch, and now look what we got. I mean, for all the craziness, for all the, wow, it was kind of cool. Minnesota was in the hunt, and Baylor was in the hunt, and Utah was there, and what do we got? Ohio State, Clemson, Oklahoma, and that little engine that could LSU program replacing Alabama. It's very blue bloody. It's very big time. But look at these teams. I mean, that Ohio State versus Clemson matchup is by far the best semifinal game matchup, at least, that we've had in the college football playoff era. And look at these four quarterbacks. I mean, Joe Burrow, Justin Fields, Trevor Lawrence, Jalen Hurts. It's a pretty powerhouse Final Four.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Pete. And I guess you could argue, chalky can sometimes be boring, but as you just did, at least it seems like you got the right teams in here and should lend itself toward the best matchups. I was asking Anthony, I believe off air a little bit earlier, before we kind of dive into these matchups, if all of these quarterbacks are draft eligible at the same time, of course they are not, but assuming they are, is Trevor Lawrence a shoe-in for you, or is there a gap here?
Absolutely.
How would you kind of, yes.
Absolutely. Thinking, I know everyone's in love with him. I still think at some point Joe Burrow is going to be Joe Burrow. I don't know how it's going to happen. I don't know when and where, but dude, you're Joe Burrow. I mean, there's a reason he did not become the starting quarterback at Ohio State. And his scheme is great. He's got all the talent in the world around him. He's done everything with it. No dog in him. He's going to win the Heisman by a gajillion. And he's bombing way down the field. He's deadly accurate. He's absolutely a top 5 overall pick, if not number 1 overall. He's great. Justin Fields is great, but Trevor Lawrence is just no one's seen Clemson play over the last 2 months because there's been no reason to.
Right.
He's been on fire. He is an absolutely amazing talent. When you talk about what a NFL quarterback in terms of like prototype size, pocket skills, arm accuracy, mobility, he's not going to run a ton, but he's going to run just enough. That's kind of what you're looking for in terms of the older school quarterback that you want for the NFL. Certainly Burrow's there. Certainly Justin Fields is there. I still love Tua. If he heals up, I know he can't stay healthy, but his accuracy is just uncanny. He's probably my favorite quarterback of the bunch. But out of these four, I'd probably go with Trevor Lawrence.
And Pete, the four teams who've made the college football playoff, three of them have a quarterback who was not a part of the initial recruiting class with that institution. Three of those guys have transferred in. Joe Burrow transferring from Ohio State, Jalen Hurts transferring from Alabama, Justin Fields transferring from Georgia, and even Trevor Lawrence, you know, he ran Kelly Bryant out of town, and Kelly Bryant transfers to Arthur's alma mater, Missouri, and then takes the starting job for Clemson. So three out of the four have a transfer starter, and even the fourth one in Clemson was affected by a transfer. Do you feel like this is sort of the preeminent example of why the transfer portal or player mobility really is a good thing for college football?
It's a great thing for college football because think about it. I mean, if Jalen Hurts was still at Alabama, they're in the college football playoff right now if he's playing instead of Mac Jones. You know, just think about all these teams that have been able to make themselves better and up the overall sport. I mean, again, not just Jalen Hurts, but Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield, they're all transfers. So I'm all for it. I'm all for player movement. I think it's a great thing. And obviously it's been great for college football. And again, like you said, these four teams, that's it. I mean, it's all about their superstar transfer quarterback who's been able to rise up. And look at a guy like Jalen Hurts. Like, there's no way a couple years ago you would have said that guy is a potential pro prospect and he might finish as the most efficient have the most efficient passing season in the history of college football. And then he goes there, he's in the system, and all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute, this guy really is an accurate passer. He's not just a, you know, kind of a runner who can throw in the Alabama world. And he turns out to be a guy who's a pro prospect now. So for a guy like Jalen Hurts, who, again, a few years ago, you're looking at him in that spring game and he's throwing worm burners all over the place. And you're like, I don't know. Maybe, you know, that is a guy who can, you know, find a spot in the league at some position. And, you know, he's just not Tua Tagovailoa. And now he's able to go to a place, showcase what he can really do, and all of a sudden, you're an NFL quarterback. Let's see what you can do out there. So it's a really good thing for college football and for these guys to be able to get their shots to do it.
And, of course, we're talking about player movement, and we're talking about Jalen Hurts' ascendancy. I guess we should also mention Lincoln Riley, some potential coaching movement.
Yep.
Pete, I assume he's going to be as hot of a name as there is here. Well, he is already, but officially here sooner than later. What do you think about Lincoln Riley's 2020 plan? Do you expect to still see him in Norman?
No, I mean, this is just speculation more than anything else, and you'd probably have a hotter angle on this than I would, but I'm convinced that the reason why Clay Helton is still the USC head coach is that Urban's gone for the pros. Either his health issue really is that major, or he's going to end up in the NFL. And I do think that at the end of the day, Urban is going to go to either the Cleveland Browns or the Dallas Cowboys, and Lincoln Riley then takes the other. Matt Rule into that mix as well.
Right.
And you've got, you know, a bunch of college coaches who are now real hot commodities on the NFL level. And you know what? That Lincoln Riley offense has just been unbelievable. I mean, it just every year, it doesn't matter which quarterback it is, which style. And think about it. Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray are not prototype quarterbacks for the NFL. They're smallish. They're ballers. You know, Murray's got a pretty decent arm. Baker's got a great arm. But they're not necessarily, you know, the Andrew Luck, Cam Newton type 6'4", you know, 6'5", 230, you know, quarterback. These guys are just from a different kind of mold. And now he's able to do it with a third guy with Jalen Hurts. So that is going to make him just, you know, that much more strong. And, like, think about it. Where is, you know, put Lincoln Riley with Baker Mayfield back at Cleveland, or put him with Dak Prescott at Dallas, and all of a sudden, kaboom, you've got an offense that can really rock and roll at the next level.
Pete, I don't know if you're a Heisman voter. If you aren't,
I am.
You should be. Okay, so I know you're not allowed to say what's going to be on your ballot, but are you—
Under penalty of death, yes.
Right, exactly. So we don't get that pendulum swinging over your head, but are you allowed to sort of prognosticate who may be in New York City as finalists?
You got to assume, obviously, Joe Burrow's got to be there. I mean, because it's his amazing season. I mean, it's just— what he's been able to do is just— it's almost— yesterday almost became like, oh, ho, ho. He just threw for almost 400 yards. You know, against the Georgia defense, it's like the best in the— one of the best in the country. I mean, they just made this look so routine. And then Jalen Hurts, for what he's been able to do, he carried Oklahoma into the top four. I mean, this is a very good Oklahoma team. Certainly they improved its defense. But Hurts being able to just, you know, it's kind of assumed, oh, well, it's Jalen Hurts. But again, he was not this type of a quarterback or passer necessarily at Alabama. He improved over his 3 years there, but he was not the guy you'd say, okay, yeah, he's obviously going to be a 200, you know, plus passer efficiency rating guy. Justin Fields, because of what he's been able to do, he's been very quietly amazing. I mean, I think there is way too much love given to Chase Young in this Heisman voting thing. Well, he's good, but look, he got a race. I mean, he didn't get a race last night. It took three guys to do it, but you saw what happened last night is that, you know, you can have a good team without Chase Young jumping on the quarterback's head five times a game. You can't have that thing working without Justin Fields rocking and rolling. So I think those three are absolutely in the mix. I love the idea of putting Jonathan Taylor there somewhere. You know, you're going to get three picks. What he was able to do all year long for a Wisconsin offense that obviously needs him to survive, needs the whole team kind of needs him to survive. And if they go to the Rose Bowl, it'll be because Jonathan Taylor was able to be kind of the main man there. So those are the main guys in some way to shuffle them around. And we'll see what happens in the next week.
And then in the midst of it all, for some reason, Florida State is doing their Mike Norvell press conference at the moment while the college football playoff is being announced.
What
very
are
weird
you
thing.
Doing? Exactly. Like, dude, come on. Like, PR. First of all, Mike Norvell, all right. Like,
he's a good Florida, coach. He's a good coach.
He's Willie Taggart. He's the same. Like, here's the thing. Willie Taggart probably would have been really good had he been given time.
Right.
And that was a rebuild that they had to do. And the thing about Willie Taggart is he stunk at South Florida for 2 years, but he built it up and then they got good. You know, he was able to rebuild Oregon. He was able to build Western Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And then this year, okay, it was kind of a rough go. They had to rebuild an entire offensive line. The cover was left bare by Jimbo and it took a little while for him to get going. And then he gets canned. And now they get Mike Norvell. Think about Willie Taggart, though. Never won a bowl game, never won a conference championship. Mike Norvell, 0-3 and kind of badly in bowl games. He finally wins a conference championship yesterday at home and barely did it against Cincinnati. But give him credit, he did it. But that's not like, I don't know, if you're Clemson, you're like, ooh, it's yeah. Mike Norvell. You didn't get James Franklin. You know, you didn't get a guy who really was kind of an A-minus list guy there. Mike Norvell's all right. He's an up-and-coming guy. But I think if you're Florida State, you're probably hoping for something a little bit stronger.
And it's probably why they made the announcement during the college football playoff. Pete,
exactly.
As always, entertaining stuff. Love listening to you and talking to you as we love to do here on The Score. Get back to work.
Later, guys. Have a good one.
Thanks, Pete.
That is Pete Futek of College Football News. He is Arthur Arkish. I'm Anthony Herron. And the bottom of the hour was brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Want to sign a one-day contract with the Chicago Wolves and a $5,000 signing bonus? Visit Sprint on Rand Road in Arlington Heights between 1 and 3 p.m. Saturday for your chance to win. We'll take a time out, come back here, keep the discussion rolling in the football sphere, get back to some Bears stuff. There was a question that Arthur was sort of beginning to go down the road about Leonard Floyd and how his presence may or may not be a good thing, a suitable thing for the future productivity of Khalil Mack. Should he stay or should he go? We'll have that discussion as we continue here on 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
I really like where he's at. Again, for me, I love production. I love numbers. I love all the fantasy stuff. But, you know, he's somebody, by the way, that won our sweep the sheds for this week. And I think for him, it speaks volumes too. He was hurting pretty good. At a point where we felt like, we, you know, It's he gutted through it. You know, in this game, it's a physical game, and whether it's mentally, physically, exhaustion, there's times where you get tired, and we just appreciate you know, the little things, and that was a little thing in this past game on a short week, and he's done a lot of great things, and I'm proud of him for it.
It's the voice of the head man, dude with the big whistle, and the half-full glass. That is Matt Nagy of the Chicago Bears talking about Leonard Floyd, his starting outside linebacker. And as Arthur Arkish and Anthony Heron, as we take you up to noon, then you'll be ready to listen to some other sports for a bit. And CBS Sports Radio will take over for a few hours. Thank you, Julio. And also, then, you'll have the Bulls at the Miami Heat. That's going to start with the pregame show at 4:45 with Chuck Swirsky and Bill Winnington. You can listen to that on the radio.com app as well. Then after the Bulls on Sunday Night Football, you'll be able to listen right here on the Score to the Rams and the Seahawks. Big game in the NFC playoff picture. So we'll join the Westwood One broadcast following Bulls postgame on the Score. And Matt Nagy being asked that particular question and in discussing Leonard Floyd and their Sweep the Sheds award that they like to give out. I mean, I think it shows who Leonard Floyd is as a player and as a person, and it's the type of guy that you want to have on your team, a guy who's physically gifted, who's willing to do the grunt work, who's willing to fill his role. But then to a point you were making earlier, Arthur, I think is a really interesting observation. Do you get what you actually need, though, from Leonard Floyd? Because my observation over basically since they signed Khalil Mack is, well, okay, so you solved the Leonard Floyd conundrum. You don't need Leonard Floyd to become a dominant pass rusher anymore because you have that, and you can get some pass rush from Floyd and then all the other Swiss Army knife things that he sort of does. But right. Then, to your point, Keem Hicks being out of the lineup here as of late, you've seen the pass rush for the Bears struggle when all the attention can just be paid to Khalil Mack. And I'd love for you to sort of illuminate to the folks then, what do you think the concern would be, could be, should be for the Bears then if you don't get more specifically, strictly? The Swiss Army knife stuff is cool. I think Leonard Floyd's an NFL player, obviously. But just as a pass rusher, do you get enough then from him to counteract what they get from Khalil Mack?
Yeah, and I mean, I kind of ask it rhetorically, Anthony, because I don't know for sure. I don't think that this is an easy conversation or that there's a really clear answer. But what we all know is that the Bears don't have a first-round draft pick. Obviously, they have 2 second-rounders, no third-rounder as well. The cap expenditures are going to be a lot more tight than they were this season. You know, you got Khalil Mack's number jumps up to about $25, $26 million. And I'm just legitimately curious, you know, do you spend $13.5 million on your number two outside linebacker who has three sacks this season right now, which is a career low? He doesn't have a pass defense. He doesn't have a forced fumble. And I know that Matt Nagy means it when he says, you know, that you can leave that for the fantasy football experts. He's playing good football. I'm not disagreeing with that. I think Leonard Floyd largely has played good football. The Bears have one of the best defenses in the league. He has set sturdy edges. He has clearly improved that part of his game. He's become a stronger, more physical force to kind of supplement that really unique athleticism. And he's been more durable, so he's been more dependable in that regard. Remember, injuries were the story in his first couple seasons. He's now started, I believe, about 30 games straight going back to last year, and is on pace for his second straight full season. So I don't want to minimize the importance of that he's already answered a couple big questions there. But I still think that there is a big question that remains. You could potentially save that $13.5 million bucks, either spread it out at a couple other positions, or if you identify a better bookend pass rusher that helps kind of maximize what Khalil Mack has, because we've seen Khalil Mack's production certainly suffer a little bit with Akeem Hicks down this year. And I want to know what you think. I mean, do you think that the money can potentially be better spent, or do you think that there is enough value in that versatility and that if Akeem Hicks is healthy, then you're all good, and then you've got one more kind of pick your poison proposition for offenses to figure out?
I believe part of that calculus would end up being whether or not, and you would assume Ryan Pace must be working on things like this already. I was yelling at Dan and Connor a couple of weeks ago, and they were like, well, I just move on from Mitch. Well, it's not that simple. You know, you have to be working on how you move on from Mitch right now.
Right.
And then if and when you do, you need to have something better in place, because you have won with Mitch in the past. So it's not as simple as just moving on from him until you do have that answer in place. I suppose there's probably a similar view of what the calculus would need to be if you were going to move on from Leonard Floyd, because there's pass rushers out there, but then where do you get it? What are you getting from a cost construct sort of standpoint? You know, can you get someone in that, let's, I don't know, $12 to $15 million range who you feel like perhaps adds more to the defense, more that you would need per se, you know, where it's, there's a role for Leonard Floyd that works as a pass coverage guy, as an edge setter, as a pass rusher that is suitable for this Bears defense. But then when you lose that other, when you lose the yang to the yin that is Khalil Mack, if you don't have Akeem Hicks out there and everybody can just focus on Mack, then I do think it does stick out like a sore thumb that you don't have that opposing pass rush force if you just lose that one dude in the middle of the defense. So if you have someone who you say, you know what, we feel like we can get someone else who's going to consistently beat one-on-one, then that can be a great thing for this Bears defense. And I think this this Akeem Hicks injury has illuminated that. So it's a really good, really astute observation on your part, Arthur. And he is on Twitter at Arthur Arkish. You can read all his astute observations on the Twitter sphere and at Pro Football Weekly, of course. And this segment is brought to you by Subway. Subway restaurants feature a different 6-inch sub for $3.79 every day. Subway, make it what you want at participating restaurants. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied. Take a quick look at the text line here. There was something I was going to. I would like to see Alex Bars at left tackle from the 712. What are your thoughts? What was the question there from 712? I think that's a bit much to ask for a guy who really hasn't played in the National Football League yet. Right now, the depth at tackle has been a concern of mine. I've talked to Hub about it even back in the preseason, and when Hub and I were discussing the draft and everything, I was really hoping they were going to find a way to address offensive tackle and depth there. They haven't. I do think Cornelius Lucas, we've seen 2 weeks in a row now where you really haven't had to say his name, and that's a good thing for an offensive lineman.
He played well in Washington, too, in that spot start with Bobby Massey dealing with the vertigo. So I think he's got three starts that have all been above replacement level. And frankly, considering what we had seen in the – at least what I had seen in the preseason, I was really worried. So credit to Cornelius Lucas. He's played well. I don't know if he necessarily solves long-term that swing tackle question. Maybe he does, and maybe Alex Barr's versatility can help there. But I would like to see potentially, if you're going to want to see Bars now, and at this point you're not going to because the Bears are playing for something. But I thought maybe it would have been more likely for Rashad Coward just because of his lack of experience. And I think it had been kind of an up and down thing with him in place of Kyle Long.
Oh,
yeah. Well, he had to correct me. Yeah. So I only know because I was, so I was corrected in the locker room. But he's real nice about it. He's a good dude to get to know and get to interview a little bit.
But with Alex Bars and the potential there, he's a talented kid, a Notre Dame guy.
Played some right tackle in South Bend, I believe. Yeah. Very limited on the left side.
Showed some versatility. Played some guard at the collegiate level as well, I believe. Yep. Yeah, so for him, it's nice to have a versatile swing player. For Coward, he's progressed on a weekly basis for what he's brought at guard. I like him so much more at guard than at tackle. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure why the Bears didn't necessarily see that before this point. But it feels like guard, especially for a former defensive lineman, you just get to operate at a quicker twitch sort of manner on the interior. You're not able to be put out on an island in the way that you're able to be put on an island to tackle. And so it can showcase some inexperience when you have him on the outside as opposed to Cornelius Lucas, who's now in the lineup, or whenever Bobby Massey gets healthy enough to return to it. And you get Rashad Coward in there at guard. And it's shown some depth that's at least there on the interior. And as much as anything, and this is worthy of reminding folks, the way that the game is being called, the way the game plan is constructed, helps the offensive line. The fact that there's so much more sprint and boot action and you don't have a consistent launch point, that ends up aiding not just Mitch and his reads and his accuracy on the move. All those things help Mitch. It aids the offensive line. And that was the refrain I kept going back to when I was trying to figure out why we're not seeing the pocket move more frequently for the Bears was – it doesn't only help your quarterback. It helps your O-line who were just sitting ducks with folks pinning their ears back over and over again on the same launch point so consistently, and it ends up putting your offensive line in a bind. So I'm glad that we've seen that become more of a consistent portion of the way that Matt Nagy calls the game, the way that Mark Helfrich helps him construct it throughout the week. And it has led to, I do think, if the game was being called the same way as it was still being called a month or month and a half ago, then we'd probably see Cornelius Lucas looking similar to the preseason guy, because it is very difficult as an offensive tackle when you've got great pass rushers just teeing off on the same launch point over and over again. You got a mobile quarterback, they've used it, and it's helped the O-line. There was one question about the, because we had our college football playoff discussion that was taking place in the last segment.
Ohio State and leapfrogged, right?
Right, yeah, from the 8-1-5. Being at, what do you think of the committee dropping Ohio State from the number one spot? It's splitting a little bit of hairs. What it ends up doing, though, is it means now Ohio State and Clemson, who I believe are really the two best teams in the country, the two most complete teams, like I was telling you in one of the breaks, Arthur.
Mm-hmm.
Now you see them in the first round matchup, and you see LSU will get to take on Oklahoma as the 1-4 matchup. So I don't know what Ohio State did that was worthy being dropped from number one to number two. I think they were still great. They ended up coming back and dominating Wisconsin and scoring the last, you know, whatever it was, 4 or 5 scores of the game mm-hmm. as they kind of turned the tide in it. So I would have left Ohio State at number one, but them being dropped to number two, it means they got to meet Clemson in the first game instead of the second one. But personally, I think the Buckeyes are the best team in America. I would have Ohio State 1, Clemson 2, LSU 3, and Oklahoma 4, just for me and just sort of my personal picks of who I think are the best teams and where they rank. There was a question from another one from the 815, Anthony and Arthur. The Bears will have to make some tough decisions at inside backer, and please no more Chase Daniel. Only heard the interview last. So basically inside linebacker, we already had that discussion. But as you move forward, do you see really quickly Nick Kwiatkowski, could you see him being a competent, consistent starter from what you've seen so far?
I can, yeah. I mean, I think he has exceeded expectations without a doubt. And he has looked more competent than I expected in coverage. We knew the instincts, and we knew he was a downhill thumper. He's looked okay in space, and I think when, again, you have Roquan, if he's at his best, you theoretically should be able to cover up for your running mate's deficiencies a little bit. So I'd be comfortable with that moving forward. What about you?
I agree, and I think both guys, Kwiatkowski and Smith, bring more blitz readiness and blitz capabilities to the table. Not that they have to do that, mm-hmm. but within this scheme, to have two backers at the inside position on the field who can be real threats and be super effective blitzing downhill. Danny Trevathan, that doesn't seem to be his strong suit.
Right.
So I think you add that into the fray where, like you referenced, you do lose some in coverage with Kwiatkowski, but he certainly improved in that aspect of his game. So that's been really nice to see. And it'll make for what's likely to be a difficult decision and whether or not the Bears' depth will perhaps be sapped a bit. Kevin Pierre-Lewis, KPL, played really well in the stead of Roquan Smith. So we'll see how that may continue moving forward. I know you were impressed with him also.
Yeah, but played good football.
He did. I personally, very impressed with Arthur Arkish. Our first time getting to do this together.
It was fun. Hope
very
it's not
fun.
The last.
Yeah, hope your toddlers were listening in as well. I know mine wasn't. My 2-year-old could care less.
Yeah, I don't think mine were listening either, but it's a nice thought, you know. Hopefully they had something better to do. We're going to go do some holiday stuff, so I'm excited. We'll be balancing some NFL action with some family time this afternoon.
Outstanding. I will do the same over the course of the next few hours. I'll be on The Final Word on Fox 32 tonight at 10 p.m. so you can check me out there. We'll go right now to CBS Sports Radio, and then we'll have the Bulls and the Miami Heat. That pregame is going to be right here on 670 The Score with Chuck Swirsky and Bill Weddington. You can also listen to that on the radio.com app. After Bulls basketball, we're going to have Sunday Night Football. L.A. Rams taking on the Seattle Seahawks. We'll join Westwood One's broadcast following the Bulls postgame show on 670 The Score. For Arthur Arkish, for Julio Raseo, I'm Anthony Herron. This has been 3 hours of fun right here on 670 The Score.
Gusto es mio siempre, socio.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.